So you're telling me that he is Vladimir Nabokov?
Yes. I only know that name from the Sting song.
He wrote Lolita. He wrote an amazing number of fantastic songs.
Oh, I don't read child pornography. Back to the Lazy Muse Game of Throne edition. We are going to be talking about season 3, episode 4. I'm Jimmy G.
And I am Eric G. Ratton. Ratton. I don't see any reason to both be just G. That's his gig.
Eric G. We can both be G.
I'm Eric Ratton.
You don't want to be a G?
I don't know, man.
You're not a G? All right. Eric, what's our beer for today?
Oh, well, today, from the Duvel family of beers, great, great, great Belgian ales, we have the Game of Thrones Iron Throne Blonde Ale from the brewery Omegang in Cooperstown, New York. Please serve at 40 degrees Fahrenheit / 5 degrees Celsius. We are splitting one pint, 9.4 fluid ounces. Or a 750 mil.
Wow, you can tell Eric is a baseball fan because there was just an ass load of stats.
I'm reading the back of the card here. Blonde ale with malty sweetness and a touch of fruity spiciness. So it's perfect for you. Noble hop aromas and notes of citrus suitable to serve to kings or pretenders to the Iron Throne.
Clever.
Or slowly so as not to disturb the yeast sediment because this is my first rodeo. But with enough vigor to create a luxurious head. And release the rich bouquet.
Vega.
Yeah.
Yes.
I missed some at the bottom there. So,
we're drinking our Game of Thrones beer.
Yeah. It's not bad.
It's a blonde ale, so it's kind of like a Lannister thing, huh?
Well, I guess so.
Yeah. Well, cheers.
Cheers, brother.
Episode 4. Here we go. It's peppery.
I suppose it is.
So, episode 4, now his watch is ended. This is directed by David Benioff, and again, we have uncredited D.B. Weiss. And I actually went on IMDb to check out these directors because there's no way in hell one guy's directing this show when it's all over planet Earth. And sure as shit.
Oh, of course.
There are
second and third unit.
Well, not even second or third units. There's literally people entitled assistant to the assistant.
Sure.
That's their title. Yeah. I mean, there's like 15 directors, so
this is a big deal.
Bravo
this
to them.
This is the big leagues, dude.
And this is written once again. We have David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and this is something I bring this up the writer and the directors only because I was following The Walking Dead last year. You know that this final season, and there were some episodes that I really kind of dug, and some that I didn't. And so I started looking, well, you know, who's given us the source material here and finding, you know, that it was this one writer, lo and behold, that was writing the episodes that I liked the most. So, I bring that up to you so that, if you're listening and there's one episode that you really dug, it's not necessarily because that chapter or those few chapters they're highlighting on are exciting. It also has something to do with, the person who's, you know, word crafting that episode may have a point of view that's similar to yours. That's what I find anyways.
Oh, sure. Not to geek out on you too much, but it's very much like reading a comic book series where they have to have several being written at one time. So over the course of a year, you might have as many as 6 or 7 different comic book writers and artists working on one title.
Right.
Now, often they'll go through a period where 20 or so issues are written and drawn
by the same person,
the same team, but often you'll have 3 issues or in a row with 3 completely different teams,
right?
And it's part of what I think is kind of wonderful about the art form, and the same can be said about the television,
right? No, well, 2 things. First, thank you.
You're welcome.
And 2, you never have to apologize for geeking out.
I always have to apologize.
That's something you have to do here at Studio 332.
We're safe.
You're safe.
Where there's a safe place. All
right. All right. So, scene one, we have Woe Is Me, Jaime Lannister edition. So, you know, we open right back up on a brilliant shot of, you know, that hand just dangling off this guy's chest.
Yes.
And
a
friendship necklace. And, you know, we have Locke and company having, you know, kind of a lot of fun at Jaime Lannister's expense.
Certainly.
Right. Yeah. You know, he's drinking horse piss.
Yes.
He's, you know, pushed down into the mud. He tries to fight.
Full head. You know, there's not a lot sticking out.
Not a lot of head sticking out?
No. Let's move on.
So I thought there was a great moment there, great cinematography where he's had the fight, he loses his sword, and he reaches with his right hand, the stump, which is, you know, great because you have that sort of phantom limb syndrome where you feel like it's still there. I've heard.
Yeah, that's something they write about.
So here's the question for you.
Hit me.
Is Jaime Lannister getting some redemption here?
No! There is no redemption. Not yet.
Okay.
No.
So he deserves this.
No, those are two different questions
Well, let's break that apart. He doesn't deserve to get his hand cut off. You didn't think that was a punishment? Well, he killed a lot of people with that hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, sort of eye for an eye sort of thing.
Yeah, he deserves that shit.
He deserves it.
He'll own it.
And so he's getting some comeuppance here. I mean, he's reaping what he sows.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you can't feel a little sympathy for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm the one who asked if he had some redemption.
No. I can feel sympathy without feeling like he's redeemed himself.
Oh, very complex individual you are.
I am. And I would venture to say that a lot of that is because the person cutting off his hand is worse than he is. Thank you.
Bam.
Mind's blown all over this.
Put that in the box with a pretty bow. Brilliantly said. Okay, so we move on to the scene two.
My revenge in a box.
Step one.
First you take a box.
Step two.
You put your revenge in that box.
Oh, yeah, baby. Scene two, revenge in a box.
It vaguely goes like that.
Whatever. They know. They know.
Put your beep in a box.
Look, I think Justin would only love it. Revenge in a box.
Well, we know him really well.
So I thought this was kind of awesome. It's not in the book. Justin Timberlake is in none of the six books. And it's disappointing.
Right, but you know, season five, there's room for it.
Maybe he'll sing one of these songs.
Right.
So this scene with Varys, you know, opening up this box is not in there. His story about how he was cut is, and this is kind of an actor thing. Go ahead.
I have a theory about guest stars on TV series and how the first season of just about any TV series that's any good has very few famous people on it. The first season of Game of Thrones, you can point to Sean Bean and Peter Dinklage, and that's about it.
There right.
Faces you recognize throughout, but those are the two people whose names you might know.
Mm-hmm.
The second season, you get Charles Dance, you get, you know, who isn't exactly at the peak of his Hollywood career.
Right.
You know, but he's a respected guy who's good, and he's a little more famous than the people who were in the first season. Then you get a little bit more as it comes on. And then third season, you start to get the real heavy hitters. You get Diana Rigg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get some of the big guys.
Right.
And that's about as much as you can expect. Because then, the fourth season, you get Shirley MacLaine. You know?
Right.
Maybe,
so, hold on. Are you telling me there's no hope for Justin Timberlake?
No, I'm saying we'll get Justin Timberlake around season five when everybody's given up on the quality of the show.
Oh, okay.
And they start going for stunt casting.
Right. Right. Well, they start jumping the shark.
Yes, if you will.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, my pleasure. So back to Revenge in a Box.
Yes, please.
This is sort of an actor thing where you have some dialogue and you give the actor busy work. things that they're physically involved in, and
usually in the form of a coffee cup.
Right. Yeah. Meisner calls it imaginary exercise. Yeah. So you're pretending to do something. And I thought this was just lovely because he didn't know what he was doing. And Tyrion the whole time is, you know, he's torn just like we are. This is interesting information, but what the hell are you doing?
Right.
And then, you know, he opens it up and bam.
Here you go.
There's this guy who knows what's happened to him. Like, it was his mouth gone? Was it sewn shut? Was it cut away? It, I mean, he looked like he had his comeuppance given to him.
Certainly.
And, you know, Varys is just, you know, deliciously happy with
his little buddy
finding this guy.
It actually reminds me of the scene in Deadwood where Al Swearengen gives that long monologue to the Indian head that he's got sitting on his shelf in a box.
Right, right.
It's different, but it was similar enough for me to think about it the whole time.
Right, and this is one of those examples where I think the show kind of gave us a little bit more than the book.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's interesting in the book, the story that he tells. It gives you some nice filler for who this guy Varys is, but this is just fantastic. The yes. The visual, and I love comeuppance. And it's one of the reasons why I like this book, because I don't like getting my comeuppance, but I like seeing people get their comeuppance on the show. I mean, yeah, that's why I like westerns, you know.
Everybody likes everything.
No, that's not true.
It is.
It's not true.
Comeuppance is the best.
But you're right. Comeuppance is the best. So we love that scene. Moving on to the third scene, we have Craster's crib. You know, and this is sort of just setting the stage for a little bit later. We're getting some of that tension building up, and you know, a whole lot of shit shoveling.
Yes, literally.
Literally.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I wrote this note, it was before we had seen some other things, and my note was Dolores Ed or Dolores Ed seems.
We need to talk about.
Let's talk about this
because I think it's Dolores Ed.
Oh, this is an inflection thing.
I think it is, because otherwise it sounds like Dolores!
Right.
And you're doing the Seinfeld thing. And it's...
Right,
it's,
right.
It's,
okay, hit me with it again.
Dolores Ed.
Dolores Ed.
To be Dolores.
Right, look that up. So, Dolores Ed seems a little funnier to me in the book. Now, this is my initial response. He since has laid some nice one-liners
that's bringing me around.
Okay.
Feeling or expressing great sorrow or distress.
Right, which I had looked that up too. Yes. So I knew that it had that sour feeling to it. But thank you.
It's important.
It is.
People would think that you're talking Dolores.
You're absolutely right. So we got Eeyore.
Yes.
And he's, you know, he's always got these great sort of woe is me poopy one-liners in the book. And I thought that it wasn't quite living up to it, but I have changed my mind. I've come around, and he's starting to lay some nice ones. And it starts with this episode. Not necessarily this scene, though. What did you think about, like, Jilly's colicky baby and that tension that's just under the surface?
I think it's interesting. We're finally getting to meet her in a real way to see how she and Sam are going to...
Right.
Interact. I think it's treated well, and they don't spend too long on a scene that, in the long run, isn't as important as what comes next.
Right. I think that's all we need to say about that. We move on. We have scene four, wind in his hair. We have Bran out running again in a dream. And, of course, a young crippled boy would constantly have these dreams about wanting to run. We have Jojen kind of creepily just watching over him while he sleeps,
right,
making sure everything's okay. Or maybe he's like reading his dreams or something. What do you think about this guy? Theon's little brother.
Little Samwise.
Right.
I think that it's an interesting way to approach him. I saw him as younger. I saw him as much younger.
Right, yeah, and he is. In the book, he's literally, as are all the characters.
Yes. Well, it's like we have Ender's Game coming out very soon, and they've decided to make him, as I understand, early high school, late middle school, as opposed to elementary school kids. And I get it on so many levels. I mean, there's
well,
no...
Masande, for one.
Yes, thank you. Well, I think that when you deal with a child actor, you want a child actor that you can deal with. And you know,
Well, it can be on set all day, too.
Well, yeah. But you also... You just don't know what you're getting.
Right.
So you age everyone, and that changes the story immensely. But that's fine.
It does.
I like the actor. I think he does a good job.
You know, we continue. We've talked about this before when we first met Jojen. In the books, it's just as slow. You know, these guys hanging out. I mean, but the reeds are there from the very beginning, really. They're at Winterfell before it gets burned. They're all in the tombs together. They escape together. So they're on this big, long voyage. And it's just it's literally even more drawn out in the books in terms of these dreams and what is happening. But what we do get in the books and we haven't yet in the series is a much more explanation for Jojen about, you know, like, this is what it's like to be a warg. You need to start thinking like this. Way more of Bran falling deeper and deeper into his wolf and you know, exploring his warg nature and having that world explained to us. And it's kind of what just hits me is it's the North's magic. We're seeing sort of different kind of magics, you know.
Yes.
There's the Red Woman and that magic that she has brought. And we see the, sort of the North has this older, almost like Native American that's tied to the earth and animal kind of magic, spirituality.
Or, you know, variations on the different traditions of, you know, voodoo. I mean, it's the shaman kind of tradition throughout. Which is nice too. It's less Merlin and more wise man.
Right.
It's interesting.
So we don't get that sort of warg 101 yet. I'm sure they'll get to it. It's not a huge part of the story.
And we don't really in the books as much from Jojen as we do the free folk anyway. You know, they get in depth about the process of what it is to possess one of these animals.
Right. Okay, so moving on, we have Boogie Nights for Podrick Payne.
It's a real movie.
You know, we have Varys exploring with Ross Podrick's prodigiousness.
Yes, and what I find fascinating about all of these things is... These are the scenes that are on the television when my girlfriend walks in.
Always incest boobies.
Always. Always.
So she just thinks it's tits and ass.
Yes.
Fantasy and boobies.
And it's really everything I watch that she doesn't watch. It's all sex all the time.
Right.
And it's not. It's
no.
I could be watching Laverne and Shirley, and she would walk in and there would be full frontal nude.
Right.
That's the way it works.
That's gross. Laverne and Shirley, anyways, that's gross. Full frontal. I mean, even in the younger days, that's gross. Penny Marshall? Oh, man.
Everything
has I listen to a lot of podcasts. And
doesn't show.
This scene, I'm so dense that almost went over my head.
click and clack for not yet, but.
This scene, not this scene particular, but the scene to which the Varys and Ross talking refers to, which in last episode with Podrick having, you know, sex and then going back and talking to Bronn and Tyrion about it was a big topic of conversation, you know, sort of right down the middle of people like, this was absolutely worthless. It meant nothing. And some people were saying it just wasn't even funny. Which I absolutely disagree with. What about you?
The tour of, are you talking the tour of?
I'm talking about him having sex with them.
Yeah.
The reason for giving him the three ladies.
I can see their point. I mean, to me, I don't know that the scene gains as much from the storytelling aspect as it does from just their feeling that they have to put a lot of boobs on screen.
Oh, right.
I think that that's probably a bigger reason for why they did it.
I disagree.
Okay. I can take it or leave it. I thought it was a fun scene.
I mean, it's any great drama has moments of levity. They have to, or else the drama's not appreciated. Well, so
you're going
to
say any great drama has moments of boobs.
So I thought this was...
I don't necessarily disagree.
I wouldn't say it's essential, but it's, to me, it does have some importance. The show, one, it's not in the book, so I guess that's an argument against it. But, you know, he did save the guy's life. And you know, this is a time when that, you know, this is like the world is Vegas. Most people don't have a problem with prostitution.
I guess my problem is that in so much storytelling that we have in this, the vast majority of the characters of this show, and they, you know, this is my liberal bullshit coming out, but it's not bullshit. The vast majority of the characters in this show are white dudes.
Yes.
And when you get a chance to see someone who is not a white dude, invariably, for whatever reason, half of the men you see are slaves or bad guys.
Right.
And half of the women you see are naked whores. And I think that it doesn't have to be that way. Now, there is a ton of stuff in the books that happen in whorehouses and slave houses.
Right.
You bet. That is absolutely something that is going to happen.
Right.
But I think every time we see a new female character, she's showing her boobs immediately. And I like boobs very much.
Okay, right. Well, we know that's not true because every time isn't true. We've met plenty of characters who've never shown as nudity.
Diana Rigg has not shown her rack yet.
You know, hardly any of the main female characters, of which there are many and strong.
Who?
Cersei hasn't shown as her boobs.
Just her butt.
We haven't yet seen Ygritte.
Right.
We did see Dany. We haven't seen the girls.
I'm not talking so much about the main characters here.
Right, but I'm saying there's plenty of those. So that we see extras with their boobs. Sure. These are like expendable crew members in Star Trek.
Sure, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be, but boy, is it fun.
Okay.
And I love the fact that he comes back and they didn't charge him. And I'll tell you why. I like it because it's legend making. This is sowing the seeds for, you know, whether it's true or not, it becomes a story that in this world of, you know, of ice and fire, if Podrick Payne carries on as a character, if he's a, you know, a knight at some point, it's going to be talked about how this guy is so big and so awesome that even the whores don't charge him money.
Right.
And that's badass.
It's also bullshit male fantasy, which is fine.
Right, but we're talking about a fantasy novel.
I know.
It has its place.
Yes. It just takes me back to Biloxi Blues.
So, you know, and we have Ross all of a sudden.
Freebie.
Right. Oh, Eugene O'Neill.
Close.
No. I have a master's degree in acting.
Neil Simon.
By the way.
This is why you have me here.
All right. So moving on. We have the subtle knife.
Yes.
Joffrey shows his fiance all the scary parts of the castle.
Right.
So, I mean, and this is, I take it, are they under the throne room?
Throne room. Yeah,
is this where the dragon skull should be?
Sort of. They do a lot of it actually in the throne room and are looking through grates in the floor to what I assume is the tombs and where the bit about visiting the skulls.
Right. Okay, and then so we have Marjorie, you know, further manipulating the king here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she just it's a full-on orchestra she's playing on this guy. And what I thought, it's sort of the end of the scene, this is a moment where it almost seems like the Queen of Thorns and Cersei could be friends. Like, they have some common ground of women being women and exercising their power. And there's that moment where Cersei, she almost says something like she would agree, like, yes, it is hard. Not even that they'd be friends, but almost like, I agree.
Right.
It's hard. And then she just decides.
She's being played a little bit.
Right. Like, she thinks she's being played, so she just stops.
Oh, she is being played.
She is being played. Absolutely. Even if there's truth in it. So, but here's the thing, that it has nothing to do with the book or the TV show, but what if Cersei was Tyrell? I mean, she's. What if she was brought up in this family?
What if the Tyrells hostage was Cersei Lannister?
Yeah, I mean, would this woman be different?
Sure.
I mean, would her game be better, you think? Because I don't think she is as smart of a player.
I mean, you know, there's you go watch any tennis match, you know, and if he'd had different teachers, Andre Agassi would have had a different game. And he might have been just as good. He might have been better. And he might have been not as good. But it's nice to see him play against Andre Agassi without trying to play Agassi's game.
That was a big jump.
No, it's not. It's a one-on-one sport, much like what we're talking about with manipulation.
Yes.
And the two of them are the two best in the kingdom at what they do.
Right.
And
they both have long, pretty blonde hair.
Yes. For 6 or 7 years, that was Agassi and Sampras. And that was fun to watch.
Right.
But I don't want to see Andre Agassi play Sampras's game. And I kind of like exactly what this is.
Right. And I didn't mean to suggest that they should change it. It's just, no. You know, it struck me at that moment. It was, wow, this lady here may have had a much better life if she wasn't born a Lannister.
Oh, well... Yeah, of course.
You know, and not too many people would have thought that, you know, in that world. Like, you have everything you need. All right, so moving past the subtle knife, we have Psyche. Theod is duped. Oh, man.
He does not get to kick that football. No.
He doesn't, right. Nice. You know, so here's the question. Has he earned his redemption?
No, he has not earned his redemption. No, it's never going to happen.
Okay.
No, there is no redemption for Theon Greyjoy.
No redemption for Theon Greyjoy.
No.
The Turncloak.
No.
I mean, if you haven't read the books, this was a stunning surprise.
And when you read the books, it was a stunning surprise as well.
Right. I mean, but we knew that a nasty surprise was coming with this guy.
We identified this guy the first time we saw him.
Right. And, you know, him leading him around. And I thought it was...
Although he came into the picture too late. I wanted him in the picture when they
season one.
The Miller kids.
Right.
You know, by then he needed to be a part of this. And
right.
I was really frustrated that he's only lately come.
Right. And I think the reason for that is, well, he hasn't exposed who he is exactly.
No.
And that's the reason why they couldn't have exposed him or brought him in season one.
Yes, they could.
Because it would have ruined much bigger surprises that are coming down the road.
No.
It would. And when we get to those surprises, we'll talk about it again. But I thought it was, you know, it was pretty great. I mean, evil Samwise here. I mean, he's deliciously evil because really believed, you know, it was like, I knew what was happening still. It was like, he's believably living in these imaginary circumstances of pretending to help this guy.
Well, and they cast an actor with an open, honest face, which is great.
Right.
That's what I want.
Good point.
In a character like this.
Yeah.
I don't want a bad guy of this sort to be the kind that doesn't have dimples when he smiles.
Right.
You know, I want to see a cute person play this kind of bad guy.
Yep. And, you know, when he has that little line at the end, he kind of slips into a different dialect, too. Mm-hmm. It was kind of fun to watch, you know. But what do you think about Theon's confession there? I mean, I know he hasn't earned redemption, but, I mean, it's pretty... You brought up an interesting point last...
Sure, he regrets it.
Right.
Because they're torturing him.
Right,
and they're
right.
trying to kill him.
And that was what I was leading
this
to.
This is not like the moment he did it, he went, oh, sorry, everybody, my bad.
Right.
Please take me and put me in jail.
Right.
No.
So you don't buy it for a second.
I
this
don't.
Guy is only sad that he's hurting himself.
Right now, yes.
And so what about that line about my true dad lost his head at King's Landing?
Oh, yeah. No, he regressed that. Yeah.
But only because of what's happening to him.
Yes!
Okay.
That's the only reason he's speaking it. Do you know? I'm sure that he felt like when that happened, he was in over his head.
Right.
And
no turning back.
He made a ton of mistakes. But ask yourself this. If he had gone to the Iron Islands and his dad had gone, "Oh, my God, my son, I'm so proud of you. Let's go kill everyone.
Right.
Do your plan." And that plan worked out perfectly, except that Ned Stark's head got cut off. I think he'd feel the same way.
Yeah, I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
No, not this guy.
But interesting question, I thought.
It is, sure. The answer's no.
The answer's no.
No redemption.
Unequivocally. So moving past that, we have the buddy picture.
We do.
You know, Brienne berates Jaime into, you know, not giving up.
Right.
You know, you stay alive no matter what occurs.
Don't you quit.
Yes, don't you quit on me. I mean, what did you think about this?
I really like what they're doing with the two of them. I think that they're advancing the relationship between these two people in a really slow, interesting, complex way. I like what they're doing.
Right. I do too. I agree. Both of them are well. It's well performed. I mean, but what do you think about Brienne's lines? Like, you're wailing. You sound like a bloody woman.
Yeah. No, it's great.
I mean, this, she's, you know, she's a tranny.
No.
She's not a tranny.
No, she.
She's a tranny in armor.
No, she's not. All through all of the books, always, she.
Is a tranny.
Is not. She is ashamed of what she was born as, but she is a woman who.
A transsexual.
She's not a transsexual.
She wishes she was a man.
She doesn't wish she was a man.
So you think she, you know, she would like some of the stuff?
I don't think she's necessarily thinking about that.
She's asexual.
She didn't know. The whole thing about her being in love with Renly doesn't work if she's a transsexual straight man. That doesn't work. Or transsexual.
She'd have been a very big beard.
It's no. This is she didn't know okay. that. This is you're being ridiculous.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
I absolutely am. Okay, so moving past the tranny, we have Cersei gets the smackdown.
She does.
And I mean, this isn't the first time. It's very important that this isn't the first time Tywin has, you know, put down one of his kids. He did the exact same thing in almost the exact same scene. He's sitting at a desk. He's writing out letters. It's even with the same – there's the exact same shot of him looking at the seal that he's going to stamp the envelope with to make sure he has it the right way. It's like they could have filmed it on the same day. And I love that because it's like, you know, you sit down. This is the chair that you sit down in when you're bad.
Right.
And we're going to talk.
Well, and you know that the two of them, meaning Cersei and Tyrion – aren't going to talk to each other about it. So it's literally just that he can't be bothered to come up with a different way to do it.
You know, right.
He doesn't respect either one of them enough to not just use the same old rote punishment.
Right.
It's great. You know,
I'm too busy for it. Yeah. And you know, what I dig about this scene is Tywin to me seems he's like that asshole friend you have, and you talk about him being an asshole, but you're really happy when he's an asshole to someone who's a bigger asshole.
When he's your asshole.
Right, when he's yeah. your asshole. Yeah. And in this scene, he's the audience's asshole because he kind of – he says a lot of things that I think the audience would love to say
sure.
To Cersei. This, you know, specifically, you're not half as smart as you think you are.
Sure.
Because – and I love that when he says, what did I do when they took that imp of a son of mine? You started a war. So I started a war. And when somebody repeats the answer, they already know the answer that you're going to give
right.
them. And they repeat it back to you. I mean, they might as well be pissing on you.
Yes.
Because it's just so demeaning.
Well, and you just – Well, the other thing that's great about that is in literature or drama or anything, when someone plays that card, you know, the you're not as smart as you think you are, you know exactly how that person is going to end.
Right, you right, know? Right.
How a person that
right.
incredibly
right.
brash and overconfident is going to meet his or her end. You just right. know it.
That's yeah, it's a good point. And there's this interesting line at the end, and I'm curious your take on it. When Cersei looks at Tywin, and she sort of has this withdrawn comment, which is, you try to stop him from doing what he likes. And it's in regard to Joffrey. I mean, what did you think she meant by that?
I think she meant that she has no idea how to be a mother.
Oh, wow.
She has no idea how to
so be intimate.
To these people. No, I really do right. think that. I don't think that she necessarily knows that that's what she means, but... You know, we've got evidence all over the place that she was not loving to Joffrey.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, not nurturing in that way anyways.
And it's by the time even a normal kid gets to be that age, you've got real trouble
right, yeah.
to curb their impulses.
Right, right.
It's just not going to happen if
right.
you don't have...
Exactly.
Establish that you are the power structure.
And thank you. It's a good leading because that's how it struck me. And I don't know if it's just because I'm in on it as an audience member, but right. When she said that, it struck to me as I know my son is a monster. You try and stop him from being a monster.
Oh, yeah.
You try. Because I have. I've tried to be mean to him. I've tried to, you know, like Robert used to beat him. You try and stop that. You got a little smile there. What's going on?
I'm sorry. I just got an email from my girlfriend while we're reading this who has just asked how the booby beer tastes. I would like to tell you, honey, if you're listening, that it was very good.
The booby beer taste was very yes. nice. Very succulent. So there we had. And I thought it was a nice moment for her because it was as close to vulnerability as I think this woman gets.
Yes. I think that's, well, with anyone but Jamie.
Right, right. Yeah. And we all know how vulnerable you can get when you're, you know, banging your brother.
Incest, yes.
So, moving on, we have Queen of Thorns dropping some funny.
Ah, Dame Diana Rigg.
Man.
Just, is there anybody cooler?
Grow
and
strong.
If you guys haven't gone back and watched some of her early work, especially through the Avengers and all the kinds of stuff she did, she's a heck of an actor, and she's really good in this show too. So it's I'm
yeah.
excited every time.
I mean, is this a possible obstructed review?
Yeah, I might have to add her to my your
yeah.
moron if you haven't paid attention to her career kind of columns.
Right, right. I mean, I just
by the way, it's an ongoing thing that I'm not particularly nice to my audience whether they're reading or hearing me. So. I apologize unless you like the abuse, which is just...
Right. But we have to say that in his articles, it's exactly opposite. He never writes about people he doesn't like. It's
no,
always
I will never,
high praise yes, in his articles.
It's always stuff about people that I love and respect.
Right, right.
Just not you.
Just... right. Not our podcast listeners.
No.
I mean, I love...
You. I mean... You know, you specifically.
If you subscribe, we love you.
Yeah.
Love in fact, I can guarantee you, if you subscribe to this podcast, your life will improve.
I'll send you a loaf of bread.
I can guarantee that. I love Grow Strong. I mean, it's just a nice little quip when the girl leaves after she admonishes her about, you know, winter is coming. These are great lines. The dire wolf. We have roses. And when the girl leaves, she goes, Grow Strong. It just, she's everything I wanted this character
yeah,
to be.
No, she's awesome. And all of the stuff between her and Varys is really fantastic.
Right.
And, you know, Varys is very good at playing deferential to whoever he's talking to.
Right. It's his weapon.
But you believe it with this one.
Right.
You know, you believe
that, it's his weapon.
That he's not going to try and cross her because he knows she could crush him. And probably knows all his secrets anyway.
Right. And I don't, you know, it's kind of what I wonder is if Varys is on your side, if maybe you're not on the right side.
Right.
And I don't know. But, it, you know, it seems
well,
that.
And we'll find out as we continue
right.
watching the series.
We'll find out.
Just how many people he feeds to each other.
Oh, right, right. Now, there is one acting thing that I didn't, I questioned, and this guy's brilliant. Right. I mean, but, and it's something, it may be way off topic for this show, but in the acting world, there is such a thing as a bad choice doesn't make you a bad actor. And him looking down at his penis, I thought was a bit kind of sophomoric in terms of acting choices.
Sure. It's also very possible that that wasn't his choice.
Like editing or something?
Well, or...
The director just said look down.
Or any number of people,
especially
on a film set, can influence what you do in a certain take.
Right.
You have no control over which take they use.
Well, since he's so great, we're going to assume it wasn't his fault.
It's very possible that it was someone up the line somewhere, and it can be any number of 20 people who have more power over an actor's choice than
right.
an actor, wanted that and wanted it bad.
Once again, good point. And so at the end of the scene, we have, I mean, it seems Varys is just very, very patriotic. And I mean that by he has this warning about Littlefinger, and you know, saying Littlefinger already has money. Now he has a title, and the last piece of the puzzle is having an army, and he's dangerously close to getting that. And he is one of the most dangerous people in Westeros.
Yes.
And you know, to which the Queen of Thorns like says, "Well, you something to the effect of you know, you really." Have it out for him or something. He's like, no, I quite enjoy him.
Right.
But he's not good for Westeros. Exactly. So, you know, it's Varys as the Patriot here. You know, and he's a transplant. He's not from Westeros. So, you know, there's that, you know, vigor you can have when you're new to someplace and you kind of like it more.
So you're telling me that he is Vladimir Nabokov.
Yes. I only know that name from the Sting song.
Oh, right. He wrote Lolita. He wrote an amazing number of fantastic songs.
I don't read child pornography.
Right. Russian-born. You know, Tom Stoppard, if I'm not mistaken, was Czech-born. You know, sometimes people who take most to a country and culture are people who come to it later.
Oh, yeah, yeah, perfectly said.
To whom it's a choice.
Right, perfectly said. So, and I think that's a good place to end on for that scene with Varys is,
sure.
You know, what's his intentions there? and then this one might shake up some ears here. I think it's like the lesbian scene. I mean, we have, not in terms of Sansa and Marjorie, but Sansa and Loras. You know, this is this is Marjorie sort of positioning herself and her family into taking a little bit more land by betrothing Sansa to her very gay brother,
right.
Loras,
right.
Which would just make for a beautiful tickle scene because they're both very pretty girls.
Yes. It's fascinating because that is a... a theme throughout the books, which is fascinating, this theme of alternate sexualities and how they're handled in these particular cultures.
Because right.
The Free Cities, no one gives a shit.
Yeah, no one cares.
You know, and everybody's cool with it. And really down by the docks in King's Landing, nobody cares.
Huh.
You know, it's
Do
all
it.
These rich assholes who care and hide it, and you know it's tough.
Right.
These are tough characters to deal with and to write. And I think some of the dialogue and handling of these situations is
right.
pretty clumsy. you know, I can understand it. It's a complex issue, and you have 30 seconds to deal with it. So
right.
it's clumsy and obvious. But what are you going to do?
Well, we'll talk about some more of the subtle knife with Marjorie here. I mean, this, you know, like we just said, are positioning the Tyrells to grab some more land, but, also something we've talked about before is I think this is another great acting moment by, this young lady playing Sansa, where, you know, she hears some great news, which she's haven't had a lot of in her time at King's Landing. And she has, again, one of those moments of, you know, she doesn't say much and just, yes, that would be lovely.
And there are ways that silence, especially for young actors, silence is terrifying.
Right.
And on camera, it's even worse because every time you move any little bit of your face, it's magnified. And Sophie Turner as Sansa Stark is just great at it.
Right.
And, you know, this is her first, really, her first role of any size ever. And you hope she can continue this kind of success with the characters this subtle. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I totally like her so much more on TV than I did in the books. But and speaking of the books, I feel like the Tyrells on TV are coming across a little nicer than I had found them to be in the book.
Yes, but I also think that that's by design for now.
Okay, so I won't say any more about that then.
You know, it's they are in a great position to not have to play their hand because you're not...
Right, right. And they were just as subtle in the book, but there were some points, this match in particular...
You don't see as yet
right.
their killer instinct.
Well, yeah, the match was different in the book, like who she was matched to and the reasons they matched her to whom they did was not as nice as this.
Right.
So moving on, I have what I call, his name was Robert Paulson.
His name was Robert Paulson.
His name was Robert Paulson.
Yes.
Now that was from The Great Fight Club when
the Immortal Fight Club.
And this scene where they burn
Fincher, Chuck Palahniuk.
Yes.
Good stuff.
When they burn their brother, it just seemed to me, for all the world, like his name is Robert Paulson, just because of the way they started chanting as he was burned. And then we have this great line by Eeyore.
Yes. Dolores.
Dolores said?
Dolores!
Where he says, I didn't know Bannon could smell so good.
See, you... up until now, have been disappointed in Dolores Head.
Right.
Wrong? I like this guy a lot.
Right.
This actor. Because...
I like the actor.
He's got to be completely dry with all of this stuff. It
right.
can't even sound like he's
right.
trying to be
funny. Yeah, no. He absolutely
it's
cannot.
He's got to be dead serious
right.
in everything he says. And that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
And I think he does a great job.
You're right. And I've come around. Like, I was wrong. He was...
Okay.
It was always good. And now, you know, I think back because he had that great line too a couple episodes ago to Sam. It was like, you're fat and you're slow and we want to live.
Yes.
I mean, and he said it.
No time for bullshit.
He was absolutely earnest. He's like, we left you because we wanted to live.
Yes.
But now you're alive and I'm not going to leave you now that you have a chance. And so do I. I mean, I'm not
an
asshole.
You know, I want you to be with us because you're the slowest one here and you might slow them down.
Right. He would say that. They would eat more of you than me.
Yes.
So you're a good...
I'm excited for next season when we get to see more of him back at the Shadow Tower.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for reminding me about that. And I mean, this is a big action scene.
Yes.
It's so tense. Really lovely the way they build up that tension.
And I want to say something about the violence in the show. Depending on the scene, I think it's fantastic. I think that there is... One of the problems that I have with film violence is so many times there's no consequence when someone gets punched. You know, you can get punched 90 times and get back up like
right,
your Hulk
right.
Hogan.
Right.
And in this one... When you get hit the right way, you get hit, and it hurts both the person who hits and the person who gets hit.
Right.
And duels last approximately 4 seconds, and probably both people die. You know, that's
right.
that's a real fight
right.
with these weapons.
Except for you die of infection.
Right. and what's great about the one example we've seen so far where the fight doesn't go like that, which was Brienne and Jaime, is they weren't really trying to kill each other. She
right.
was trying to
She wasn't
going to
kill him.
And he didn't want her dead. He wanted to prove a point. And that it worked fine.
Right.
So I'm so far, I'm a big fan of the violence in the show.
Yeah. And the you know, the reason for it building up, the resentment there. And, you know, against this slimy guy, you know what he's doing. And you're cold and you're hungry. I mean, these guys aren't likable, the guys who did this.
No.
But you could see it coming, and I just thought it was just the tension was lovely. And you know, but we lose the old bear.
We do. We lose the former Lord Mormont.
Right. You know, Jer. Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Jer or Jor.
Jor.
Jor and Jorah.
Right.
And I'm sure that you recognize the actor who played.
Yes, I do. But why don't you give us a little rundown on what this guy's done.
Oh, he's, I mean, every freaking BBC show from the 70s to now, he's done at least.
Anytime there's a tough Scottish guy in there.
Yes, and that brings us to, you know, the four other big Scottish movies of our lifetime, you know, in terms of huge hits.
Yes.
You know, he's Angus MacLeod in Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Mr. Renton, you know, Mark's dad in Trainspotting.
Yes. And, sitting on his chair.
Oh, yeah. And he's in Braveheart, of course. I mean, it's
Braveheart.
It's,
this
dude is the perfect. Perfect guy.
Yeah, play. He's absolutely who. Like when I first that first episode in season one, when you see him, it's like, oh yeah, absolutely, that's who. Nobody else could play this role.
Oh, and you do recognize the guy, you know,
right?
It's James Cosmo. He's terrific.
He's got a great sounding voice too. Okay, so you know we have Craster's, you know, Craster's Keep. All the there's a lot of sister wives now without. Yes. Without anyone. And I'm glad he got it. You know, he thought he was a badass. He thought he could take some people on. And he just died right away, which I loved.
Yeah.
He didn't hurt anybody himself.
No.
He just got put down.
Yes.
But I feel like there's a lot more bad crows. You know, like, and it was such a, there was a melee going on and swords flying. You don't really know who was doing what, but it just had the feeling of more people were against Mormont than were for him. Like, I couldn't tell who was for who because they're all wearing black.
Well,
so.
And I think after he dies, that's what we see is they stop being able to trust each other because they're not quite clear on who did what. And
just degrades.
And where anybody stands. So the rest of their time going back to the Black Tower should be really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Okay, so now we move on to the dog trial. So we're reintroduced to Dondarrion. And we did see him in season one. Ned Stark sent him off to hunt down the mountain.
Yes, very briefly. We saw him.
Right.
He had two lines and
right.
Knelt and left.
Just barely a thought. But now we meet him again. And, you know, Arya stands up for a friend. She says, "You're the guy who killed, what was it, Baker's son?" Or who? Who did it? Who was her friend? What, I mean, that he rode down and cut in half.
That's right. In the,
because she hit Joffrey, and then Joffrey went, you know, bleeding about it to his mom, and she wanted justice. So the Hound, you know, hunted him down and cut him in half.
That's right. I can't remember.
I don't know if it was the Miller son, you know, somebody.
That sounds right. The one that she played with her dog with.
Somebody's kid.
Yeah. They fenced with sticks.
Right. And, you know, his defense is that age-old soldier's defense. I was just following orders. Yeah, big deal. You know, and,
not just soldiers' defense. I mean, that's the Nazi defense.
Right, right. I was just following orders. And, you know, it's important to note here that, you know, those orders came from a very specific type of person, and not everybody would have given that type of order. Like, none of the Starks would have said do that.
Right.
The Tyrion Lannister would never have said, you know, go kill that kid.
No.
It was the butcher's boy. That's who it was.
Right.
So it was just a very thin argument, and I only bring it up because, again, you know, listen to other podcasts on this topic. This was something where people were like, you know, big deal.
Why are you so angry?
He was told that's what
you're
he was told
bro?
To do. You know, in this world, that's what they do. It's like that's just not the case. Even in this world, the way it was presented,
well,
there's characters who would not have done that.
Wouldn't have done it. They don't give the order to someone they don't think will do it. That's the thing.
It's not
the type of order that would go to anybody but someone they knew would follow it without question. So all you podcasters, you're wrong.
Except for us.
Right. Bad move.
Okay. So I got to take a moment here.
All right. Hit me.
Because this next scene.
Yes.
When I read this in the book. Way back in, you know, the early 2000s, whenever
the
it was,
aughts. I remember
the aughts.
Well.
I was sitting on my futon in Washington Heights.
That would be in New York.
In New York City, and it just hit me like
I was probably in Hell's Kitchen.
A punch in the gut. Like I knew. I was like, I cannot wait to see this on the screen because I absolutely know it will be. And so this has been years of anticipation.
Sure.
And usually when that happens, when people tell you something's great, it's just not as good.
Right.
This was every bit as satisfying as I could have hoped it would have been.
It was a good scene.
I mean, this is badassery. This is Dany gets her boys.
Yes.
She gets her Unsullied.
Yes, she does.
And it's better than in the book.
It is.
So, I mean, why do you think it's better?
I like it very much from the point of how they had both Mormont and Barristan treat her. This is the scene where she finally convinces them that the way they've been treating her is completely wrong and that she's not a little girl. Mm-hmm. They're not big men.
I know not the ways of war.
Right. She knows what she's doing, and she is in no position to have to explain herself to anyone.
All right.
And it's awesome. It's just really well done.
Right.
And how, at the end, you know, when before it all happens, when the slaver discovers that she speaks
Valyrian,
it's wonderful.
It's absolutely wonderful. And so it's important to note in the book that it's Mormont's idea that she only speak the common tongue.
Yes.
And I love that they took that away and they made it solely Dany's idea.
Right.
And it was obvious from the very beginning. So as soon as they go there, it's, you know, don't let them know you speak it. It'll just give you a better position. So it wasn't as dramatic of a reveal that she could speak Valyrian.
No, but the reaction of the slaver.
Right, is just as dramatic. But now we have both. We have his reaction and the audience.
Right.
If you hadn't read the book, going, oh my God, she understood every word
right.
that was being said. And I just loved it. I mean, hearing the language when she addresses the Unsullied in that, you know, in Valyrian, the way she handles that, and I don't think it's so easy to speak a fake language believably.
Well, I also really love how the Unsullied reacted when she said, "Kill every man with a whip in his hand,"
right?
Because they stood still for several moments while the soldiers and slavers
right.
looked a little freaked out what's right. gonna happen. And then one guy took two steps forward
yep.
and impaled a guy. And then everybody went crazy.
And then hell breaks loose. And then she lovely. Turns. And then very, you know, she doesn't yell. She just says, "Dracarys." And Drogon burns his face. And it was awesome.
Yes, good violence. Good violence.
I've watched the scene probably 5 times.
I'm sure you have.
Just because, I mean, I literally have been waiting for years to see this.
Yeah.
And when you wait that long.
I've got some in the series that I've waited a long time to see. We're not there yet. But
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what those are.
You know.
You know, in the book, one of the things they did take out was she actually takes the Harpy's tail, the whip that makes you in charge, gives you charge over the Unsullied. She whips Krasnus yes. with it. So, you know, it strikes his face and he's like bleeding from that. And then of course, Drogon burns him and proceeds to, you know, they sack the city.
They do.
She does in the book and on the show, it says don't, you know, kill any child under the age of 12.
Which, everybody else.
You know.
Fair game.
Because 12 in this world is I guess, pretty 18. Ripe. but I thought, you know, this supplanted episode 3 as this is my favorite episode of the entire series up to
great.
This point.
Great.
Just absolutely loved it. And then, you know, they end it just perfectly with the dragons up in the air. And you see all three of them kind of flying around. And they're going to wreak havoc.
Yes.
So there you have it. That was Lazy Muse Game of Thrones edition.
Yes.
Episode 4 of season 3. I'm Jimmy G.
I'm Eric Gratton.
Eric Gratton. You can find me at Jimmy at the Lazy Muse at Twitter.
And you can find my column, Obstructed Review, at pinetarpress.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Totally Kidding.
And once again, please subscribe to the podcast. It doesn't take up any room on your media device. It just lets iTunes know that we're out there and you're listening. Leave us some comments in the iTunes forum. And if you have anything you want to say to Eric or I, if you want to correct any of my mispronunciations or horribly...
Remember, this is just Dork Sports Radio. These are all opinions and thoroughly unresearched.
Right. Off the cuff. We take no responsibility, but we will take your comments. Nothing's too nice. Nothing's too mean. And you can send that to comments at thelazymuse.com.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Gotta keep it together. Please keep it together. You gotta keep it so I can fall apart. So I can fall apart. Fall apart. Gotta keep it together.